Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Diecast Movie Podcast. And today we're going to be doing something a little bit different than we normally do, because normally we do movie discussions where the genre in the movies decided by the role of a die or interviews. This is kind of a combination of the two. I'll be talking to director, writer, actor, martial arts enthusiast and practitioner and fan, Michael Wirth, about some of our favorite martial arts movies. And then we're going to go into the new release of The Game of Clones, Bruceploitation Collection, Volume 1 by Severn. And to give you an idea of the films that'll be coming up in that and so on, because I'm excited about that coming. It's available for pre-order if you go to severnfilms.com. And it's way lower than its normal price. I think it's normally $200, but right now if you get the pre-order, it's $135, so it's $65 less. And we're going to be talking about it more during the interview discussion, so you'll have the chance to get an idea of what's on it then, and then you can use, you know, make your mind up whether you want to get it or not. If you want to learn more about Michael Wirth that we talk about during this episode, I did a full interview of him way back on episode 52, and we talk about a lot of things that Michael has done in his career. So I hope you take a listen to it and go for it. The movies that we both pick as favorites, we pick a couple of obscure ones and a couple of ones that are going to be like gateways if you're not used to watching martial arts films. So that way, if you're an experienced one, Michael's going to throw you a couple that you might not have heard of before. And if you're not, I throw out a couple that'll get you into the style and the genre of martial arts movies, which I grew up loving, and so did he. So just before we start our discussion, we're going to listen to a movie trailer, The Clones of Bruce Lee, which is going to be one of the movies that'll be available in The Game of Clones, Bruceploitation Collection, Volume 1, just to give you a flavor of what that's like. Otherwise, enjoy the episode.
The Clones of Bruce Lee.
The respected and loved Chinese superstar Bruce Lee has just died.
Starring Dragon Lee, Bruce Lee, and Bruce Lai.
Suddenly and without warning, he fell into a coma today.
The Clones of Bruce Lee brings a new dimension to martial arts films.
Scientists and police made a momentous decision. They would create the clones of Bruce Lee. These identical specimens of the late Bruce Lee are trained in all the martial arts through scientific techniques. The Clones of Bruce Lee, starring Bruce Lai, Bruce Lei, Bruce Tai, and Dragon Lee.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Diecast Movie Podcast, and we're doing a different episode than usual today. We're going to be doing a movie discussion, but we're going to be talking about favorite martial art movies, some of ours, and we're also going to be talking about a new bundle that's coming out that's going to have a lot of martial arts movies coming into it, and I'm joined to talk about this with the person that I know who knows the most about. There's other people that might, he'll say, that probably know more about martial art movies, but in my personal group, he is the man, and that's Michael Wirth, who I've interviewed before, so you can go back to an earlier episodes, listen to that interview, but actor, director, producer, writer, martial arts practitioner, martial arts fan, one of the experts of the Bruceploitation films. How you doing today, Michael?
He's a janitor, too. What do you know about that? I'm doing good.
Well, they didn't have that listed on your IMDb, so I didn't put janitor.
Yeah, that's right. keep that one secret. That's in my pocket.
Yes, he even cleans up when he's done filming. He does it all.
That's true. That happens on the low budget films. You got to be able to, you know, get that broom out when you're even when you're the director.
And just before we start diving in all martial arts, for the most part, one thing I always got to mention when I have you on, and it's still one of my favorite movies that I've seen in the last 10 years. I mean, it's in my top 10, and that's Appleseed.
Oh, thank you. That's really kind of you. I appreciate that. I'm really glad to hear that. That makes me happy. Yeah, that we had a Blu-ray release of it, and then we just got it on Tubi just recently. It just popped up, so it's starting to like get a little more accessible for everybody to see it. But yeah, it was one of my favorites to make, so I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Well, you had Rance Howard in it, and you had a lot of other people, but it was pretty much a buddy movie with you and Rance going through, and finally he gets that starring role with film, and he just owns the screen, and you did such a loving tribute to him. That it's such an enjoyable film to watch. And I got it on Blu-ray, and I'm glad that now it's out on the physical media, but also everybody can finally see it on Tubi, because the last time we talked about it a few years ago, it was only available on Showtime, and it's now moved to readily available.
Yeah, they got a great Blu-ray with a audio commentary we did and a second version of the film that was sort of the preview version we did. It's a few minutes longer, like 6 or 7 minutes longer when we screened it for his family and, you know, Adrian Barbeau and all the different people I brought to the screening. It was that version. And I wanted to include it just because, you know, I'm not saying one's better than the other. It's got just a little more detail in it, and it's just fun to have it and document it. And, you know, there's behind the scenes stuff. So I was glad we got it on some physical media, because it's always good to have, you know, guys like us, like to collect, you know, have our video collection, you know.
Well, I like that, the video collection, and for a main reason. Sometimes it's on a streaming service and sometimes it's not, you know, and this way I can just say, well, I got a Blu-ray player. I got it. So I can put it in anytime I want and let it roll. And I love it. I have people come over and I show it to them. And I have yet to have somebody say anything negative about the movie. All of them enjoy it at various levels. It depends on how they connect, because everybody brings a different perspective in. But everybody's enjoyed it so far.
Oh, thank you. That's really nice of you. I appreciate that. Well, it was made with love. It was definitely made with no intention of trying to be successful financially. It was just a group of people that came together and really believed in this idea and this story. And I'd written it 10 years before we made the movie, and it was written for Rance. I mean, I wanted to do a movie with him really badly like that. I'd done a couple of movies with him before, but just he would come on for a week or a few days and shoot some scene. And so the fact that it got done just months before he passed away is, you know, I was really happy about that.
Yeah, and again, like I said, I'm not kidding. My top 10 listeners, if you've heard me talk about it before, it's definitely one everybody should see, everybody should watch. It's a buddy picture. It's a road picture. It has a lot of human stories with it, and touching little small stories going through as they do their journey. And it's a mentorship too. It's just a really solid, good movie. And the soundtrack is killer.
Oh, great. Yeah. The music was important. You know, I always think road trips, it's like the music is what you listen to when you're traveling. So I really wanted that to feel, you know, like it's, you know, the kind of music you would hear driving down the road. So I'm glad you felt that way.
Well, I have it on Blu-ray. I've been able to show it to everybody. So I think I've seen it probably 6 times in the last year, you know, because it's one of those things I put
gosh.
In for people.
You're the best. Well, we got to get you a signed copy. You've broken a record, so I think you deserve one at this point.
Thank you. All right. And martial art movies, you are extremely knowledgeable, because we talked about in our interview, that's what Bruce Lee was, one of those people that you saw at an early age, and it was a gateway into not just films you love, but a lifestyle for you in practicing martial arts. And we're going to each give about 3 favorites, and we're not saying these are our all-time favorites. We're just saying these are some of our favorites, because as any film enthusiast knows, the favorite list can rotate around all the time. You know, number one might always stay number one if you did it as a best thing, but 2 through whatever always seems to rotate to the mood you're in at that particular day. And being that you're the guest, Michael, I'll let you go first.
Oh, well, that's very kind of you. Well, I'm going to go with a sort of a no-brainer for me. This one will always sit for me in the top of list. And that is a film called The Hot, The Cool, and The Vicious. Now, you wonder where they got that title from, right? It's a film directed by Lee So-Nam, who I've met a number of times. Stars a guy named Tan Tao Ling, who I've also known over the years, and Don Wong Dao. And it's one of my favorite films. I saw it as a young kid in the theaters back when the Grindhouse experience was still going on. And just a great, very, very spaghetti Western sort of style intrigue martial arts film. But if you get a chance to catch it, and you know, if you hold on a little bit, there may be a release of it coming up pretty soon. On Blu-ray, but it's just it's one of my favorite films, and you basically have two characters. One's a cop and one's sort of a mysterious vagrant style character. One's really good with his kicks, the other's really good with his hands, like his punching. And just, of course, in the greatest tradition of King Kong versus Godzilla, they will have to, you know, bond forces towards the end to defeat a common foe.
I haven't seen that one yet, but that's the good part about talking to other people about movies is that you add to your ever-growing list. And the great thing about martial art movies, you got to see them in Grindhouse. You got to see them on the big screen. When I grew up, it was Kung Fu Theater for me, you know, on Saturdays when it'd pop in, and I always got to see the different ones of the week, and that was always a fun thing because, I mean, Bruce Lee was regularly shown, but then the other ones rotated around, and you never knew what you were going to get. And I think you had a similar experience with that too, right? With Kung Fu Theater.
Well, I think you're pointing something out, which is that to me, there was always the first initial experience of these movies was on the big screen, right? That's kind of everything was intended for. But then you have people that discovered these movies like yourself at different incarnations of their sort of their consumership, which would have been, they went from like the theaters to the Kung Fu Theater, which was on TV. And right around that same time is when you started getting the video, home videos started to happen. It hadn't quite caught on yet, but that would be the next incarnation. And then, of course, YouTube. So you get different people that have different nostalgic connections. Like for you, you mentioned it was the Kung Fu Theater, which I completely remember. As a matter of fact, I know we're going to talk about it in a few minutes, but the Blu-ray disc box set we have coming out, we emulated the idea of Kung Fu Theater that you can choose to watch the film with an introduction, a Kung Fu Theater introduction, or just bypass it and watch the film. But it was that was also part of my growing up experiences with these movies.
That is something we'll get to in a little bit. I'm really curious about to learn more about. My first one is one I saw about several years ago, Dirty Ho.
Yes.
Gordon Liu and what is it? I'm terrible at these names, so please help me. But what, Wang Yi?
Wang Yi,
yeah. All right, the two of them, the chemistry they have in that movie, and the way they move around, and I love it where the prince or Mr. Wong, as the character was, because he was hidden as the prince, how they perfectly exemplified the fighting without looking like you're fighting, you know, where he's like, he's doing these normal tasks. And it's like, it's this effort of how choreographed everything was. So, and you know what's going on, but to the general public, they don't really seem to be doing it. And I thought that was just so well done. And you just enjoyed it. And the chemistry that the two of them had and the sets, the sets were just amazing in this Shaw Brother production that I just enjoyed how everything was just beautifully done and set up.
Shaw Brothers just made some of the greatest, you know, and Dirty Ho. But great, there's a great tagline on the poster for Dirty Ho. It says, "You haven't lived until you fought Dirty Ho, then you're dead."
and for those wondering, Dirty Ho does not mean what a lot of people would assume Ho would mean. It's basically, what is it, a thief or a criminal?
You're right, exactly. I mean, that was the... I mean, I think, you know, I think that was an original title too for the film, but I think, you know, for the Western world, it was such an ironic title that they just kept it. So it worked pretty good.
I just love it. 'Cause when you tell people, especially when I was telling my wife, oh, yeah, the boys and I are going to watch Dirty Ho. at least for some fun explanation. You're going to watch what? You heard me. Dirty Ho.
Yeah. Lau Kar Long directed that one. He was an amazing choreographer, but as a director, he's done a lot of incredible movies. So it's a good pick. Good pick.
Oh, thank you. And listeners, if you haven't seen this one, I think this is also, a lot of these films are a good gateway that we're talking about into the martial arts films that I love and that Michael really knows way more than I do about. So if you're looking and you haven't seen some of these, you know, because we do multiple genres here, this is probably a good little starter list of things to look for and find and watch.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think, and the Shaw Brothers, they had a very, you know, they were the studio, you know, I mean, everything else was, except for maybe Golden Harvest, which eventually competed with them, there, everything else was a much smaller independent studio. And the Shaw Brothers had a very in studio way of shooting things. It was old school. You know, you came in, you shot almost everything on the set. Sometimes they'd go out in some locations nearby, but it was very studio oriented, very classical. But some of the best martial arts movies in the world came out of there. So.
Oh, I agree. And which takes us to your next pick. So I'm not sure what you're going to pick next.
Well, you know, I was going to cheat a little bit and pick one of the movies that's in the box set. I decided not to. So we'll probably talk about it as we go. It's a film called The Dragon, the Hero, which usually sits in my top list, and decided to go with another independent film that has absolutely been a favorite of mine since I was a kid. And I'm trying to pick ones that are not so well known, but it's called The Thundering Mantis. And The Thundering Mantis, it takes the idea of a kung fu movie where you have a student learning a specific style and eventually he's going to want revenge, et cetera, et cetera. But this is a case where without giving the ending away, where the style, of course, a mantis style, starts to overtake the lead character in the story, a guy named Achi. I mean, his character's name Achi, played by Lung Kar Han. And a great, 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 great movie directed by Teddy Yip. And fantastic if you get a chance to see it. Thundering Mantis from 1980. You got to look it up. Because the ending of it has been, in my mind, unrivaled in terms of an end fight scene and its creativity.
I love it. You're going with the lesser knowns because you're making me add to my list. And it makes me also have harder to discuss the film after you. But
well, yeah. No, I mean, I was taking it away from you, but I wanted to get your audience into, you know, maybe looking out a little out of the box, because we could throw some pretty common kung fu movies in there they may have heard of. But I'm trying to go a little. I think my last pick will be a little more online, but we're you know, Thundering Mantis, Long Par Yong. Sometimes he's known as Beardy. Great. He wasn't even a really trained martial artist until he got into film, but he's one of those guys that you would just, by the time he was, you know, in his later years, he was one of the better martial arts screen fighters you get. And just amazing, amazing movie.
And I'm looking forward to seeing it. And I probably, my picks are going to be more mainstream.
That's fine.
Which is fine. None of them am I picking Jackie Chan. I love Jackie Chan. And I love the funny, but the next one has been a favorite of mine for decades. I remember seeing it when I was a teenager, and every time I watch, and all my family loves it. My daughter, my sons, they love it because of the interplay between all the characters. The five venoms or the five deadly venoms is just, to me, it's one I could put in all the time. And just the choreography of all the stunts that they're doing is just breathtaking how they pulled that off. And yes, it has a detective story going on with it, where who did the murder and who's the bad ones of the deadly venoms. And you have the different styles that are going on and the costuming and the humor that is being portrayed there. And I love Philip. Is it Kwok? Walk?
Phil Kwok. Yeah. Right. For those that, no, John Woo, he had a great role in Hard Boiled. So if you ever get a chance to watch that, see that.
As the lizard, to me, I love him. I mean, it's just every scene he's in, it's just, I'm just drawn to him and the way he plays his character and all that stuff. So I love.
Well, we actually, when we did our documentary, Enter the Clones of Bruce. One of the people we interviewed in the documentary was Lo Meng, who plays the Toad. So he was out in Hong Kong when we did our interviews. But yeah, no, I'm with you on that. I'm with you. And of course, you picked one that is directed, Lau Kar Leung directed the first one you picked. This one, another Shaw Brothers film, was directed by a guy named Chang Che. Chang Che is probably the most well-known, he's the Sam Peckinpah of Kung Fu movies in many ways. You know, he's the John Ford, probably, of Kung Fu movies is probably a better description. But an amazing director who did some of the best martial arts films you're ever likely to see. So the Five Deadly Venoms is a great one. I think they've tried to remake it actually a number of times. Never be as good as that one, but the idea of it was, you know, tossed around a bunch of times here in the U.S.
I can't imagine the U.S. pulling it off. I just can't. I mean, they can try. I'll watch it. I'll give it a go. And I'd hope I can be proven wrong.
Yeah.
If they offered you, if they were doing a remake, an American version of The Five Venoms or The Five Deadly Venoms, and they said to you, Michael, would you want to be in this? How long would it take you to think about it?
I would have already been saying yes before they asked, you know. I mean, it's like one of those things where I've always say about remaking movies, I say we're better off remaking ones that didn't work, that had a great idea, than ones that had a great idea and were still great. Because it's, you know, like they're talking about remaking Enter the Dragon. They've been doing it forever. And I understand the urge to want to do it, because when it comes from a place of just love, like how fun would it be to play Enter the Dragon, you know, like play it as a new movie. But the reality is you would know what you're up against, you know. And I feel like doing Five Deadly Venoms, you could go out and do it. And maybe if you had the right people and everybody was really focused, you could still make the movie and make it good without having to compete with the original. You know, I mean, there's been a couple of movies like that, like True Grit, I think came out and was a movie everybody pretty much loved, but still loved the first film and it wasn't feeling competitive. So it's possible to have it done as long as it's, but yeah, I think it'd be great.
And if you were offered it and you had a choice, which Venom would you be?
Or you know, would it be? I would probably pick the Scorpion, only because Sun Chen, who plays the Scorpion in that, his kicking dexterity was amazing. You watch that film, he's one of the unsung kickers of Kung Fu films. You got guys like John Liu, Bruce Leung, Tan Tao Ling. They're like notably the best kickers on screen. Casanova Wong's another one. But Sun Chen from that period, boy, his kicks were amazing. So I'd want to take his role just because I'd want to work on my I love kicking has always been one of my favorite things in martial arts to do. So that would be something for me. It would like heighten my training for the movie.
And I agree. I love the kick too. When I was doing Taekwondo before I suffered too many physical injuries, it was something I loved to do. And it's if anybody's never done martial arts, you should try it. There's so many different ones out there, and you can find out what works best for you. There's so many different styles and techniques, and some of them are not really they're not really used for defense or offense, but they're used for meditation purposes, just to help you with your body. So there's so many variations that are out there. Give it a go. You know, you got nothing really to lose.
Yep. No, it's great. It can open a lot of doors in many different ways.
All right, so the first two I picked were good, I think, entry gateway ones for people to get into. You picked two that were more obscure. So once they get the gate, they get the feel what the martial art movies are like. Now they know what other two to get. What's your final pick?
All right, well, I couldn't go without picking a Bruce Lee movie. And even though as a child, my favorite repeatedly, because it was the most often played, and it was the one that I could probably almost recite all the dialogue from it today straight ahead. And it's such a crossover of martial arts people, but that would be Enter the Dragon. But I'm going to pick Fist of Fury. And the reason I'm picking Fist of Fury, or also known as the Chinese Connection or Time of the Iron Hand, which I strangely enough was one of its first release titles here in the U.S. There's actually a movie called Mikey and Nikki, I think it's called. And there's a scene where they're driving and they're passing by a movie theater and you see up on the marquee, Time of the Iron Hand. And that was actually Fist of Fury. The reason I picked that is because as a film, from the standpoint of cinema, from the standpoint of camera work, blocking the actors and the director with the camera, staging of the fight scenes, I have discovered that film to be the most well-crafted of all of Bruce Lee's films in that regard. If you want to just watch it purely from the way they shoot the film, the way the lighting works with Bruce Lee in the shadows or in the light, the way the camera can rotate and pan during scenes. And I mean, you could dissect it over and over again to find great ways of shooting sequences from when you get the main bad guy, the main Japanese guy, how he's presented in shot in the very first scene, and he walks into the lens and everybody else is below him in frame and he's all prominent, and it just gives you the sense of power. I mean, there was a real, Chris Chen was the cinematographer. Both Chris Chen and Lo Wei, who was the director, did The Big Boss, Bruce Lee's first film, and this film. Big Boss is a fun film. Some people, for them, their favorite Bruce Lee movie. But once they got on the studio at Golden Harvest, I think, and they had a little bit more control and access to things, they made a, just to me, has to be in the top 10 of all the best made Hong Kong action cinema ever. So I would pick Fist of Fury for a number of reasons. Plus, if people come to me and, you know, they say, what's your favorite Bruce Lee fight scene? If in terms of the one-on-one fight scene, in terms of a person fighting one-on-one, I pick the fight with him and Bob Baker near the end of Fist of Fury as being the best.
You're not going to get an argument from me. You know, the Fist of Fury, I've seen the Bruce Lee movies. Sadly, there's so few of you know, the real Bruce Lee, I guess you could call it, or whatever. And so you can watch them over and over and over again and as many times as you want. And just his speed, his charisma, when he comes onto the screen, and I don't care if you're listening to it with the English dub, or if you're listening to it, you know, in whichever language it is, without sound, you could turn the sound off. And when Bruce Lee walks in, you just feel it. You just know when his presence is in there. By the way, the other people are reacting to him and the way he reacts to them, you can feel the electricity. And it's just few performers or actors, whatever you want to call it, have that ability to walk on stage or walk into a room and just own it. And people always say, well, how do you know what is it? You can never define it. You never know who's going to have it, but when it's there, you know, it's there. And that's just what he always had.
Yeah. I think you actually hit it on the head. Why I always, I mean, there's a number of reasons, but I'm just saying, if I was going to pick one, that's the reason why Bruce Lee endures. It's, I think some people get caught up thinking, oh, it's because he was the fastest human being on earth, or he could not be beaten. Look, even Bruce Lee knew he could be beaten, you know. And you can sometimes even look at martial artists today who have learned over the years from the Bruce Lee's mistakes and successes to be better fighters. It would probably give him a run for his money in terms of the fighting. But what he had that nobody else had was exactly what you said. And I think that endures as a personality on camera, as a personality who taught people martial arts, and just as a thinker. I mean, he was an amazing thinker. He was way ahead of his time. And, but yeah, I think that's, you hit it on the head. When he steps in, he can just be kind of quiet and sit there, which was, again, a Steve McQueen kind of trait, you know, and Bruce Lee had it for sure.
Yeah, and also James Coburn, and some of these guys had that magnetism where they can walk in and own it. And for me, the Bruce Lee movie I'm picking as my final favorite, because it's Enter the Dragon. I mean, everybody knows it. And I think, to me, it's a great martial arts movie, but it's not the best example of a martial arts movie. I think, you know, like if you're looking at the genre en masse, it's more of the other two I brought up that'll give you a better feel of what it's like. But for mainstream audiences, and this is why it was the gateway it was, it was able to bring people in, because you had a multi-ethnic main cast. You know, you had Jim Kelly, John Saxon supporting him. And I think that draws the average person in. So this is like the gateway drug. Not a movie about drugs, but it's the gateway drug into the movie. But what I also love about it is the first part of the movie is him working with the student and being reflective, using the mind. And that, to me, it just gives you more of the feel of what his philosophy was, his style. It's not all action. There is some thinking and thought-provoking going on in it. And
yeah,
Bolo Young is in it. And any film that has Bolo in it as one of the villains is always, I mean, come on. You look at him and you think there's no way in the world anybody could beat this man.
Well, I know you picked an interesting note on him because, you know, his real name is Young C is his real name. And that movie where he played a character called Bolo is where he got his name. He was basically inherited that name through that movie. So now we all just call him Bolo, but of course that's not his real name. And it's a movie that has a cross. You have this cross, you know, first off, when it was being shot, I mean, it was a Hollywood film coming into, you know, it was into Hong Kong and making a martial arts movie. It was like they brought Panavision cameras in, which they, you know, nobody had ever worked with there before. And, you know, this invasion of these American actors and filmmakers that came in. And so everybody, you know, because it was obviously a big cast, you know, with all the fighters. There's this, when you watch the film now, it's so amazing to stop frame it because you're seeing the actors, the superstars that were to come, whether it was Sammo Hung, who fights Bruce Lee in the very beginning, or, you know, Jackie Chan pops up in it about two or three times, you know, gets his neck broken by Bruce in one scene. And that's always a moment when you stop and look at it for a second. It's like, little does Bruce Lee know he's holding on to the only other probably kung fu actor that's going to rival him for fame and success. And he was only at the time 18 years old. You Angela Mao Ying, you get just so many people in that movie that just would go on to Lam Chi-ing, Yun Hua, all of these people that would go on to huge success later. So it's a fun movie to watch for that reason, especially when you know what to look out for in terms of all the actors in there, stuntmen and such.
And I love all that parts too. And I think it was just interesting how the film is done. It's because it's different than, like I said, most of your martial arts movies that we were seeing at that time and ones that followed. I just enjoy it because it had the premise of the spy movie. I mean, really, you could have seen, I was, you know, it's kind of surprising because, you know, there's no guns allowed on the island. You're waiting for Bruce Lee to have some kind of secret agent gadget or something like that to pull out. And the Cobra scene. I mean, you know, he's smacking a Cobra for crying out loud, and that's real, you know.
Yeah. It's funny is that the script started before it became that movie as a Western, and it was going to be a Western where there was this, which sounds pretty great. If they were going to remake the movie, this is how I think they should remake it. It was an island run by like Native Americans, and they had people coming in and fighting in this like kind of like a tournament. And so there was going to be a black cowboy, or I don't know if it's going to be, probably going to be a slave, probably back in 73, you know, a white cowboy and an Asian. I don't know if he's going to probably be a minor or whatever it would have been. I forget the name of the title, but it was originally written as a Western. And then they updated it. It was called Blood and Steel when they wrote it for when they modernized it to shoot in Hong Kong. And then, and there was another actor who was going to play Williams in the film that, who decided they went to him and decided if he wanted to do it. And he was like, nah, it sounds like a low budget movie. I don't want to do it. And so Jim Kelly stepped in and said, I'll do it, which I'm thinking to myself, that guy must have regretted that for the rest of his life.
It's sad because like, there's somebody that's like, well, you could have been remembered forever. And now you're just, you're a footnote.
Yeah, you're a footnote. And nobody knows your name. Yeah.
And if anybody does know your name, it's a trivia answer. Who was the guy that could have been in this great movie? Oh.
Yeah.
In a sad way, it's not you because you chose not to do it. But now, when Bruce Lee died, which was shortly after this movie debuted, like didn't it debut?
Yeah, it hadn't even been really. He passed away like less than a month before it got released. I mean, it came out, I think, in August of 73. He died July 20th, 1973.
So before it was released, but while he was filming Game of Death,
He actually had shot the stuff he shot at Game of Death was before Enter the Dragon. In fact, they were shooting Game of Death stuff while they were negotiating Enter the Dragon deals Bruce Lee had directed a movie called Way of the Dragon, the one that Chuck Norris did. And then after that, he said, I'm going to start shooting this Game of Death idea. And so he brought Kareem Abdul-Jabbar out and Dan Inosanto and Onion Jay, who played the judo guy, and started shooting. And they just kind of like, while Golden Harvest was negotiating with Warner Brothers, they just kind of kept letting Bruce shoot. Just shoot more fight stuff. Just keep going. So he was shooting. Then when finally they made the deal and that Warner Brothers came into Enter the Dragon, he stopped. They shot Enter the Dragon. And he was going to go back and finish it, of course, but he ended up passing away, so he didn't get to do it.
And, of course, the film was finished, so to speak, and put out with, you know, we could talk about that another day. What that was like. But to me, the main thing is the footage with him and the fights that he had filmed came out. So there is always some good out of what could be some bad. And that was the good part.
Right. Yeah.
But you are the man with Bruce, and you know all these different actors that ended up being utilized in the Bruce Bluetation films. I mean, you have a Facebook site, what's it, the Bruce Bluetation Bible?
Right. There's a company I'm associated with called the Bruce Bluetation Bible. It's a way I've been for a decade now trying to get this sort of subgenre of kung fu films, which were all the films that were inspired by, wanted to rip off, wanted to follow along maybe in the conjecture of Bruce Lee, and made all these films with often imitators of people that behaved like Bruce Lee in some fashion or another, or the storyline followed a sequel to a Bruce Lee movie or was about him or whatever. You know, I mean, there's a number, this went on for like 10 years where you had this, you know, there was a span of about 10 years that this lasted right around. I mean, the first couple of Bruce Bluetation related movies were actually being shot while Bruce Lee was alive. But that would be anything we call now Bruce Bluetation. Like when I was a kid, they were called Bruce Lee ripoff movies. You know, we just said, oh, it's a Bruce Lee ripoff movie. But they were just films that were either inspired by him, were following suit in his storylines, where there might've been sequels or prequels to movies he made. And for many, 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 many years, because a lot of these films are not really well made. Some are, some have some great choreography, but what happened is they became polarizing, you know, especially if you were a Bruce Lee fan, because you either looked at them and said, oh, these guys are just terrible. They're just demeaning our favorite human being and et cetera, et cetera. And so you hate them. But then there are other people that get it. I mean, you got people like Quentin Tarantino, who says that he believes that Bruce Lee was better than Bruce Lee, you know, and that I wouldn't go that far, even though I know Bruce Lee. He's as a human being, he's a fantastic human being, and even he doesn't like to be compared to Bruce Lee. But I've been trying for years to say, look, there is something. First off, these films are a part of history. They're a link in the chain of action cinema, whether you like it or not. They're like a prism through which people at a particular time saw Bruce Lee through. Like, you can watch some of these movies and get ideas of how his culture was trying to either approach him, look at him, try to redefine him. I mean, there's so many interesting aspects of these movies if you watch them and look at them that way, that it's like it's important not to stick them under the dirt pile. So I spent decades finding people that had these films on 35 millimeters, buying the films so that I'd have them for the future, you know, curating and saving the movie posters. I didn't just collect the movie posters because, you know, I collected movie posters. I was like, I want to collect these because they're going to get torn up and thrown away. And one day we're probably going to need them for some sort of, you know, historical record. And so luckily about 7 years ago, I came to, you know, I've been a sort of a one man trumpeting this thing, and nobody's really been listening until I met with David Gregory, who runs Severn Films. And I said, this is so fertile ground for us to like take these movies, restore them, re-release them. Most of the time you're watching them on YouTube and they're all cropped and faded from being standard definition. And so they look terrible. And I said, look, we could save a number of these films. People like Yuen Woo Ping, who went on to do The Matrix, worked on these films. You know, I mean, there's like the number of stars that did these films are incredible. And he thought about it and called me up a year later and said, let's go do this. And so we went off and spent 6 years shooting a documentary on it. I ended up getting to meet everybody who was, you know, my fan, who I was a fan of. Well, not everybody, but a lot of them. Many of actually 5 or 6 have passed away since we even shot the documentary. But as of the last year, I would say, there has been an absolute sort of people coming out of the closet now. I've got people that I just years ago were going, oh, I hate these movies. And I'm seeing them now posting going, yeah, I loved this movie as a kid. And I'm like going, yeah, 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 get out of here, man. But I'm glad. I'm so happy. And we're getting a chance to be a part of this shining of the light on these sort of funny, funky. I mean, you look at a movie like The Clones of Bruce Lee. It's like one of the worst movies of all time. But much like we love Plan 9 from Outer Space with Ed Wood, and we hold it dear, so how The Clones of Bruce Lee is, you know?
Which I love, because you guys were able to make The Game of Clones, Bruce Ploitation on Collection, Volume 1. So yeah. I'm assuming, since it says a Volume 1, that there is a Volume 2 somewhere in the horizon in the making.
Well, yeah, we didn't, you know, obviously it was a hard announcement, but we managed to secure either rights to a number of films or find film elements to a number and still don't have the rights. So we got to a point where we were going to release Volume 1, because we've got more than twice what's in Volume 1 available to us. And we had to start looking at the film, seeing which looked the most prepared and ready for release, seeing what, you know, we had to make sure we had elements for it. We had to make sure we had rights secured. And so I can say there's a great chunk of movies that people are still, like, I was reading some of the reviews on this, and they're like, oh, I wish this movie was in there. Oh, I wish that movie was in there. And I'm like, we got those movies. They're coming. We just couldn't quite release them yet, because maybe we didn't have a complete version of it that we still need to go out. Because we're Frankensteining a lot of these movies together. Like, one of the films I can probably just mention is called Bruce Lee's Greatest Revenge. And it's not in the first box set, but it will be coming out. We literally had to find three different film prints. I found one in an Italian cinema. One came out of South Africa. And then another was managed to find a high-definition master of it. I can't remember where we found it. And we're like piecing pieces together of each one to try to make the film complete. So it's a lot of work, a lot of money, and a lot of time that goes into these things.
So basically, you are the Indiana Jones of martial art films. You travel the world to find these, because, and I can see you saying, no, this belongs in a film library on Blu-ray. We have to restore this. This does, you know, take that away from those corrupt people. Well, yeah, I shouldn't say corrupt, but hopefully the collectors are willing to let you do
that. Sometimes they are. Yeah. It's a very strange world, because, you know, I'm trying to buy these films because I want to preserve them so we can release them. But there's a lot of film collectors out there. And on the one hand, I'm glad, because most of these studios just threw the films away or threw them in the ocean or, you know, whatever. And there are a bunch of collectors that would buy them. But the problem is, when you run into a lot of collectors that just don't want anybody to have them. I've seen it a number of times now where they just want it. They go, yeah, I've got that movie, but I don't want to do anything with it. I just want it to sit in my basement, and maybe I'll watch it one more time before I die, or whatever the weird psychosis is with that. I'm the opposite. I'm like, I want these things so everybody can see them, you know? And so I have a storage unit outside of Los Angeles that's just packed from floor to top, you know, with film prints that, you know, I'm waiting to either release or do something with. So.
And that's what I love. You're the collector who wants to share all this. Like, come on over. I want to share it all to you. And how you're doing that? You're doing that through physical media. And Severn has the great package. It's 8 discs, if you get it through Severn, 15 films. And most of these films, all but one, is a film that's you're restored and brought back from the brink, so to speak. You know, you went out there, found them or whatever. But the first one up is one you've already mentioned a little bit about, and that is Enter the Clones of Bruce, which you put out last year. And could you talk a little more about that? Because that's the one that I've been interested in ever since you told me about it a couple of years ago.
Yeah, well, that's the documentary. That's the documentary I produced. You know, you'll see me in it talking about the films and stuff. This is what we started 7 years ago. And we went out and got all of these voices that nobody's, and a handful of these people have never spoken on camera before. So it was a real, you know, it's a real treat in that regard. And like I said, a handful of them have passed away since doing this. So it's a good thing we went out and got them. We toured it last year at the film festivals. We premiered it at Tribeca in New York. and went through a long, you know, almost a year long of showing at different festivals. And as we record this right now, which is we're at the beginning of April in 2024, we are in a couple of weeks starting our last tour with it at the Alamo Draft House Cinemas. And we brought over, for the first time in 40 years, we're bringing over Bruce Lay, who is one of the top three Bruceploitation actors. And he's going to come with us and do meet with the audience, do Q&As, introduce a couple of his films like Enter the Game of Death and The Ninja Strikes Back, et cetera, that he did. And it's just like a once in a lifetime opportunity. So, if the due day is not passed, you need to catch this. So this will be the final tour in theaters, and then the movie comes out, as you mentioned, on the box set.
Yeah, which is available for pre-order, which will be coming out. I think it said Severin has it in June.
Yeah, it's either May or June. And if you get it through Severin, like you mentioned, there's an extra disc on there that's not going to be through any of the other secondary retailers like, you know, Amazon or wherever it might pop up. And it's a worthwhile disc. It's got two films on it. One of them is a sort of a rare condition film called the Black Dragon versus the Yellow Tiger, which was a sequel to Bruce Lee's Way of the Dragon and was shot while Bruce Lee was still alive. So it's like one of the very first Bruceploitation movies ever made. The second film on that disc is one that everybody has been, it's like the probably rarest kung fu movie of all times, maybe next to Tiger Boy, which is a film from the late 60s that has yet to surface. But it's called The Big Boss, Part 2. And it's this film that's been for many years talked about, speculated on, and we have it on this special disc. So it's worth getting for that.
I'm going to say, also, The Black Dragon versus The Yellow Tiger, you have an interview with Clint Robinson in there, you know, on
correct.
That disc.
Clinton Robinson, who, by the way, I mean, again, I don't know if you are, when we're going to San Francisco to tour this movie, I think it's on the 16th of April, he will be there. He lives in Sacramento, and we're bringing him out to the screening. But he's a great guy. He's a grandmaster in Taekwondo, and was his one movie role, but playing the main heavy at the end of Growling Tiger or Black Dragon versus the Yellow Tiger.
And that's what I love, is that you're able to find a lot of these people. And I think it's great that he was one, it gave you the interview, and two, he's able to go and hopefully, you know, meet all the fans and realize, hey, we really love you. You know, we really enjoyed this movie. And it gives it that appreciation that might've been missing, you know, from, because most people probably didn't know it was him unless he tells them.
Yeah. Right. Right.
But as we said, there's six other discs. Now, you mentioned a couple of the movies earlier. Is there any other ones you want to highlight? Because there's like two movies a disc. So there's plenty to.
Yeah, I think The Clones of Bruce Lee, which we were talking about earlier, is one that people just love. It's just a terribly wild movie. It's like you're like, can't even believe they're making this movie sometimes when you're watching it. So we have an audio commentary on that as well. And what I did in sort of the spirit of the movie being such an ensemble sort of piecing together of scenes, we have an audio commentary. I don't know, it's probably been done before. I just hadn't seen it done, where I give everybody a 10-minute segment of the movie. So you're going to hear somebody talk for 10 minutes and I talk for 10 minutes and somebody else talks for 10 minutes. So that's how the audio commentary goes on that one, which is kind of fun. Another favorite movie on one that I mentioned at the beginning is I would have included in your top three list. It's called The Dragon, the Hero, which is directed by a guy named Godfrey Ho. And it's a great, fun, wild martial arts movie starring Dragon Lee and John Liu and Philip Coffey. And what's amazing about this particular release of the film, besides the new transfer, is that I did an audio commentary with the film's director, Godfrey Ho, which a lot of these kung fu movies, there's not very many you're going to find from this era, you know, that of any note that has a director on it doing a commentary. So we got, you know, it's a pretty rare event to get a hold of him and have him talk about the making of the movie. And that was just a dream of mine. A couple other films on it, Bruce and the Iron Finger. You get Bruce Long and Bruce Lai all pairing up together in that one, which is a fun one. Another fun one to watch on the disc, it's a film called The Dragon Lives. It was also known as He's a Legend, He's a Hero. And it's one of the, it's not the best of the Bruce Lee bios in terms of the handling of the subject matter. But why on our disc it's so good is not only is the scan of it beautiful, but the woman that plays Bruce Lee's wife in the film, who plays Linda Lee in the film, is a woman named Karen White. And she came in and did the audio commentary with me. So we've got a lot of voices that were actually on the sets of these movies doing commentaries for the first time. And it kind of makes this, I think, this set such an important step. You know, it's one of a couple. You know, we got more to come. But I think it's a great first step in introducing people to these movies. But also for those who want to understand them more and have another second, third, fourth, or fifth angle, you know, on these movies, it's a great way to do it. Since there's a lot of content. I think it's like over 24 hours of just commentaries and documentaries. I did I shot one of the documentaries on it. It's called Godfrey the Hero, and it's on the disc for The Dragon the Hero. And it's just that we were following him around Hong Kong as he talked about making that movie and making movies in general. And those would be the ones that for me stand out.
One thing I want to mention, though, like you said, there's over 24 hours of bonus features. You know, so it's tons and tons of bonuses.
Yeah.
One thing I'm looking forward to is the roundtable discussion, because you have I think what I appreciate, because sometimes you have the commentaries, and which are great, but sometimes it's nice to see everybody interacting and you can see people talking. And I think the way I understand you have it set up is you guys are literally around the table and you're talking about it, you know, the different, you know, aspects of the, not sure if it's one film or like basically all the films or just the genre itself. If you can get more details, but I think it's kind of cool. You have an eclectic group.
Yeah, I didn't want to, I was thinking, you know, because I was curating all the extras on this and trying to decide, I didn't want to just, you know, me as a fan my whole life, you know, if you told me at any point you're going to have the opportunity to do this, you know, of course I would have gone, well, I'll do everything it takes to get this thing done right. So I decided instead of just having another talking heads where you see somebody talking in the camera, oh, I like this, like this. I thought, you know, as friends, when you sit around and you see a movie and you have a conversation, I thought this is something, you know, I haven't seen too often done, at least as an extra. So I came up with angles. You'll notice one is the Games of Death. It was just us sitting around talking about the movies that replicated or imitated Game of Death. And we just, you know, we overlap each other. One person talks, another person talks. It's just very, it's improv. You know, it's like we're not reading script or anything like that. So I think we'll see. You know, I mean, one of the things I'm going to do is once this comes out and people review the disc, you get an idea of what's working, what's communicating, what's not. So by the time we get around to volume two, I'll have a better idea of how to do them, you know.
I'm looking forward to that one because a lot of my favorite movie discussions, because half my episodes are interviews, half are movie discussions. My favorite ones for me, and I think from a lot of listeners, are the ones where it sounds like they're listening to two guys or three people or whatever talking at a table at a restaurant about their favorite movies, which just sounds like exactly what you were going for at the round table. And you can just, and you're listening in and you're just like, wow, they're really having some fun. And I'm learning about this movie and that movie. And then the enthusiasm you have for those movies leads you to seek things out. Because to me, that's one of the fun things about talking about movies. You don't have to agree with each other, but it's just, I love people's passion. And if they're passionate about a certain film, I'm going to give it a try. Doesn't mean I'm going to like it, but I'm going to give it a go because I at least know what the pros going into it are. And sometimes they'll bring up some of the cons and you can usually, just by knowing your own self, you can tell if it's going to fit in your wheelhouse. Because not every genre of movies is going to fit in everybody's wheelhouse. But sometimes you never know. The genre you thought you didn't really care for, you know, that particular movie could be one that you would enjoy because sometimes they cross genres.
Yeah, exactly. You're right. And that kind of is how it felt. It was like, you know, no subject. We just said, look, we'll just talk about this. Whatever your opinion is fine. And I think it worked out pretty good. It was fun. You know, we had a good time.
Like I said, that's what I'm looking forward to. And also, you brought this up earlier in the episode. I loved Kung Fu Theater. And now your experience with Kung Fu Theater was different than mine. Mine was literally, they just showed the movie. But yours had, like, to me, like the horror host, but it's the Kung Fu host. And if you can go into a little more detail about it, I think for listeners that love horror host, you could be, this could be something that, you know, it could be a future for you.
Well, it's funny, as a kid, I grew up watching creature features out here in the Bay Area. It was Bob Wilkins and, John Stanley eventually took over. But then we'd also get the Ghoul on the East Coast, on Friday nights. So I loved these. I would get up it's not just like I saw them a few times. I created the creature feature fan club. I made cards. I had my friends. It was huge for me. So then later, as I got a little older and Kung Fu Theater came, where I'm from, again, in Los Angeles and in the Bay Area, where I happen to be right now working, there was an introduction where the guy would come in, he would talk about today's episode is the Leg Fighters, and he would talk about the movie a little bit, and sometimes they might have a karate demonstration, and they'd come back every once in a while and do some stuff. And so I actually started to write a script about my experience with the horror movie host when I was a kid. I wanted to do a family film about horror movie hosts. But, when this came up and we were doing this, I said, look, let's do a Kung Fu Theater introduction, In fact, we were going to even try, we didn't do it this time, but maybe we'll do it in the next one. I wanted to do a full Kung Fu experience, Kung Fu Theater experience, where the film plays and there's the opening, but then I pop up a couple of times during the film and do a little recap or something, But for what I do is I introduce every single one of them. It's the stuff you can choose to watch or just bypass if you don't want it. But I just take 2 to 3 minutes and just sort of summarize the movie you're about to watch. And I talk about the film elements that we use to get the film. And, there's a little bit of that, but it's just done with just love and a little tongue in cheek. And it was great. I enjoyed it so much. It was one of my favorite parts to do.
I'm looking forward to that. And I'll be one. You could put down one person who bought it, who would love to have you have a thing where you can opt in or out of it, where you're in there, where it would have been the commercial breaks if it was being shown exactly. In the movie thing. And you could be riffing on the movie, adding different things to it, because some horror host would add different facts and other people made fun of it. Obviously, in your case, I think you'd be adding the facts and adding different things to say, oh yeah, if you really enjoy this or this particular actor here, they're also in this film and that film, for like 30 yeah. seconds, 45 seconds. It's, to me, it's the nice little info part that's in it. And again, if you watch that a couple times, you can be okay. Now I just want to watch it straight through. You can easily just pick it on the selection. So it's not like you're stuck with it. You have that option. So I think, but the option in or out, I don't see why it shouldn't be done. I mean, I think if you did it for one, you might have to do it in the future ones down the road, because people will be like, well, how come we only did it on one of them? Why can't the rest of them?
We might try, and then volume two, I'll see if I can talk them into doing it on one of the films, but, at least we'll be doing the intros to all of them again, but, you never know. It would be fun to do a full Kung Fu experience,
Do you have any guests joining you in any of the introductions, or is it always you?
Well, in this case, we only had one, but it was the director of Enter the Clones of Bruce. I brought him on to do it. Otherwise, we didn't really have any good guests to come on. I was actually going to come on and have somebody do a demonstration or something, but we just kept it clean and straightforward. But it's good. It's got some good information. Like, for instance, if you choose not to listen to commentaries, you just want to get a little bit about the film, you'll get a good little overview at the beginning of the movie. So
it's almost like you are, what is it? TMC or TCM? Turner
Classic? Right, you got Turner Classic Movies, yeah.
So you're basically doing that with the martial arts movies. And I just appreciate it. And I'm glad that this is out there. And I want the listeners know it's on pre-order. And the pre-order price is significantly less than the box, the suggested retail price. So the suggested retail price is like $200, and right now it's $135. You're talking $65 less.
Right, and point out with Severin, they do limited quantities. They're not, if you watch, go back and just look at any of their box sets that at least was released in the last year or two, they're gone now. And you go on eBay, and they're all $500, $600, $700, whatever crazy amount they're charging for them. Like their Al Adamson one that they did, they sold out of that, and those sell on eBay between $500 and $700 a piece. So if you're interested in this and even a little bit, grab it at that price. It's 8 movies, so if you break it down, it's like very, it's 8 discs. It's 13 movies?
To get it through from Severin, it's 15 movies.
Basically paying $10 a movie, but then with all the extras that come with it. So, and there's a booklet in there. It's 100 pages with some great essays and stuff. So it's, I think it's really worth getting. And if you want it and you wait, you could lose out on it within the rest of the year or something at some point. I don't know when they're going to sell out, but they sold the bundle out like within the first 48 hours. And the book that I did a book that's also for sale. I might even be already out of stock, but it will be a different version of it will be popping up on Amazon. I did a book called Martial Art, and it's just taking about 150 of my movie posters I've collected over my life related to Bruceploitation, did high definition scans of each of some of my favorite ones, and they're full page, full color. It's like a coffee table book. But we did a special cover for the Severin release, and I think it might have sold out, but there will be a second version, a hardback version online on Amazon. It's called Martial Art, a History or the Art of Bruceploitation Movie Posters, written by me, Michael Wirth, curated by me, I should say. But it'll be on Amazon coming up pretty soon for pre-order, I think in the next week or two.
I will say, as we're recording this, doesn't mean it's still available in Severin. They have a limited quantity of 100. So if you're listening to this and you're interested in the book, go right to the thing. Hopefully it's still there for you. It's probably not. I am one of the lucky ones who got a bundle for the movie, the box collection, because I was paying attention to the Bruceploitation Bible Facebook page. So I knew when this stuff was dropping and coming out, and I saw this thing saying, warning, only a few left. I want, because I was going to talk to my wife to say, is it okay if I get this? And I'm like, oh hell, I'm not letting this go. So I just went and got it. And I'm going to have to live with the repercussions of spousal approval later on. But the stuff that came with the bundle was just amazing. And I couldn't resist it. I don't want to tell everybody what's on it because you can't get it. Except for one thing, a vintage poster signed. Oh, by who? Tell them, Michael. Tell them.
You got two signatures, actually. You got the bundle. You get, amazingly, Bruce Lee signing. He's signing one of the items in there. And then you've got Clinton Robinson, who is the villain in The Growling Tiger. And I to me, that just the signatures alone are worth it to me. Just, you go on on eBay, you don't even find signatures for Bruce Lee. It's just, they just don't. I had probably the only signatures prior to this of anybody. And so that was worth it, in itself. And you get the tape, the Anders Nelson, who Anders Nelson was actually in a Bruce Lee movie. He was in Way of the Dragon as one of the thugs that gets beat up in the alley. But he's a musician, and he did a couple of the theme songs to some of these Bruceploitation movies. So we did a replicated a tape, like an audio tape of his music. In conjunction with him, he owns the rights, and we worked with him. And it's, going to be a cool little extra memorabilia thing to own.
I'm looking forward to it, and I don't want to bring too much more about it, since it's been sold out already. I don't want to make people feel sad, yeah. But it's just one of those things that, when you see these things, get them. So if you want the book with the special cover and it's only in Severin, if it's still there, grab it up. If you want to get the movies itself, like we already said, it's on sale, for the pre-order price. So you're saving $65. And I don't know what it's going to be, afterwards. I don't know, like Michael already said, how many quantities are going to be. If it's suggested retail 200 and it's sold out, it's going to be, like he said, at least 50% more probably 100% more. So it's going to be 300 or 400 in the aftermarket.
Exactly. Probably right.
Because I've seen too many things with the aftermarket just skyrocket. And I'm just glad you did this work, for all this decades, buying these things, doing, like I said, the Indiana Jones of martial art films. They should get you the hat with the picture of you with the fedora and
yeah, that's right.
Because you do have the look. I mean, you have the look of a rugged guy that would do the exploring and everything else. So you could pull it off.
I feel like it. It's making me rugged just doing all this searching. I'll tell you, and I've gone all over the world trying to find these film prints, and then at the same time maintaining a film career all at the same time. So it's been interesting,
And we'll say our proper goodbyes in just a second, but I want to thank you for joining me on this show, talking about some of our favorite martial art movies. And again, bringing these movies of Bruce Bogdation back so we can all see him. And I'm the one who I saw him in Kung Fu Theater, a lot of these. So I'm looking forward to seeing him again, or in the case of the Big Boss Part 2, seeing it for the first time.
There you go.
Hello, everybody. I hope you enjoyed that episode. I know I'm looking forward to getting the pre-order that comes in. I was lucky, one of the lucky few to get the bundle edition, so I'm really looking forward to the extras that come with it. As you heard us say, sadly, the bundle edition sold out really fast. As Michael said, he doesn't know how many copies they're going to have of the Bruce Bogdation collection, The Game of Clones. So if you want to make sure you get your copy, it's best to pre-order it. And remember, by pre-ordering it with Severin, you get the exclusive bonus 8th disc. Also, we talked about his book that's coming out, Martial Art, The Art of Bruce Bogdation Movie Posters. And it's still available as I'm recording this, when this episode comes out. So if you go quickly, you'll still be able to get your copy of it. I hope everybody enjoyed the episode. And if you want to, send us feedback at diecastmoviepodcast@gmail.com or leave us a message on our Facebook page. You know, I really want to hear what martial arts movies that you guys like, which ones you think would be a good one to pick for as a gateway to get somebody interested in the genre, or what are some other obscure ones that are out there for people to watch and seek out. I want to thank Michael Wirth again for joining me, and I think it's only fitting that we go out with Kung Fu Fighting. So I hope everybody has a great day. Thanks for listening. Oh, oh, oh. Everybody was kung fu.